Hello and welcome to Digital Logic PC Gaming Podcast with Ender's Logic, Flopsy, and your host, Robert Digital. Now turn your game volume down, your earbuds up, and fucking enjoy.
All right, so we're going to start off with a little game here. This is how this game works. I have a list of a top list in some respect, and we're going to play a game, and I'm going to ask you the list, and we're going to start with Bobby. So Bobby's first up on the list, and he has to answer one of the things on my list. If he gets it right, we move on to Emilio. If he gets it wrong, Amelia wins, and then we switch back and forth.
So until, I could technically win without doing any effort.
Correct.
Like my sex life.
Yep.
Okay, correct. Cool. Ready.
So we're going to start it off first. Top 10 lists of best-selling video games of all time. So, Bobby, you're up
first. Wait, one stipulation. PC or...
No, just
in general.
Straight up. Okay. Best-selling video games of all time.
Best-selling video games of all time. Well, number one's got to be Grand Theft Auto 5, right?
Grand Theft Auto 5 is number 3, but you got it. Amino?
Super Mario Brothers.
Is number 4. Go ahead, Bobby.
I'm going to go with Grand Theft Auto 4.
Grand Theft Auto 4 is not on the list.
I win!
I'm just going to go down the whole Grand Theft Auto series.
Number 1, which you guys are idiots, is Tetris, followed up by Wii Sports. So, Wii Sports...
In 1,000 years, if we sat here for 1,000 years, you kept asking me the same question, I would have never thought Wii Sports.
Okay, So, first point goes to Emilio.
Naturally.
Second question.
We're going to start with me, right?
Yeah, this time it's Emilio. Most expensive video games to develop, top 10 list. Go.
Okay, that's going to be Call of Duty, Modern Warfare.
Which one?
The latest one.
4?
Sure.
You are wrong. It's not even on the top 10 list. Number 1, though.
Wait. Give Bobby a chance. Okay. He already got the points, but...
Most expensive game to develop, Grand Theft Auto 5.
That was number 2. The most expensive game of all time was Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. To preface this, this is going to be both... This is both development and marketing costs.
Okay.
It was $50 million to develop and $200 million to... They marketed $200 million on Call of Duty Warfare,
so
Modern Warfare 2.
You guys can't say that I'm crazy for my choice, though. It's Modern Warfare, but I just have 4 instead of 2. I mean, that's not a stupid...
4 is not... I'm down to, like, level 25, and I'm not seeing any
I guess
of that.
They learned...
Well, you said the latest one, and that's not Modern Warfare. The latest one is what? I didn't play it. Advanced Warfare.
So, Modern Warfare 2, Grand Theft Auto 5, Final Fantasy 7, Star Wars The Old Republic.
We're all tied up, Bobby.
All right, last one.
I'm so much smarter than Bobby. It's going to be easy.
Okay. A little twist on the original question. Best-selling franchises of all time.
Oh.
And we're going with Bobby first.
Grand Theft Auto 5.
No, so just Grand Theft Auto.
Franchise.
But I'm just saying
Grand Theft Auto. You can't say chicken nuggets.
I know, but my answer so far has been Grand Theft Auto 5 for everything. And if I keep
that is number 4 with 195 million sold.
Final Fantasy.
Final Fantasy? Let's take a look here.
They have 17 versions.
Final Fantasy is on the list with 110 million sold.
Call of Duty.
Call of Duty, I believe, is up near the top, but let me take a look here real quick. Okay. Yes. Call of Duty, 175 million sold. Go ahead.
Okay, so I'm going to have to go with Street Fighter.
I think you are incorrect, sir. Street Fighter is not on the list. Sorry, sir.
What's the biggest one? Super Mario?
Number one on the list is obviously Mario, with 509 million copies sold on all the franchises.
Jeez.
Number two would be Pokemon with 270 million. The Wii series with 200 million, and Grand Theft Auto and Call of Duty, obviously, rounding out the top 5.
What were all those developed on? All that stuff.
And you guys missed The Sims at number 6 with 175.
I know, that shit went crazy.
I wouldn't guess that.
Yeah, you guys are slacking.
Wow.
So, who won this?
My superior intellect did not hold up. Bobby won that with one word. He just said, kept saying Grand Theft Auto 5.
That's all you got to do to win these days.
Grand Theft Auto 5. definitely.
Should we preface this by saying that we were drinking at a barbecue all day? So.
Yeah, Chad and I are inebriated. Bobby gave up drinking when he drank too much. And so, here we are.
So, we're going to have a good time.
I can't hold it together the way Chad did last weekend. Chad was
wasted a rock star last weekend.
And held it together, I thought. Yeah. I thought I did a really good job.
Yeah, it went pretty well. So, at the end of this episode, or near the end, we're going to be having an interview.
Yeah, I'm excited for this.
Red Hook Games, very excited for that. They developed Darkest Dungeon. We're going to be talking with Chris. You're going to have to help me on the last name here. Barossa?
I think it's Barossa.
All right.
So Red Hook Games was developed, was created with two people. It was a creative director and a lead programmer. So Chris is one half of that. So we're going to have an interview with basically half of the developing team of Red Hook Games. And they've obviously expanded since then. But these two guys are the guys that really kickstarted this off. And obviously Red Hook Games is the group that's doing Darkest Dungeon. One of our favorite games of last year.
That's what I was about to bring in. The reason this is so far, like as far as we're all going to cast our vote, so far this year, this is the best game this year.
Yeah.
But I am also going to bring up, there's no softballs that are going to be pitched here. We all love it, but none of us play it. And why is that? It's because it's fucking brutal. And we're going to bring that up. That's part of the whole interview. You got to bring up the nice and the bad.
So if you are playing the game, check it out at the end of the podcast. If you're not playing the game, you're an idiot. Pick up the game.
It's amazing. Because you'll play it for 20 minutes and love the shit out of it and never play it again.
No, when I was playing this today.
It's so much fun, right? It's so good.
It's almost more fun to start over again and again and again.
Yeah.
Just to like...
What I brought up today too also is that your starting crew and my 20th crew aren't that far apart.
Yeah, not at
really.
All.
Really. What are the difference, really? Maybe a couple items.
A bunch more positives and negatives on your team is the difference.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's not a huge difference. Yeah. So playing a long ways isn't as conducive as it would be towards something else.
Yeah.
Playing smart is.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right, so stay around for that. And then we're just going to try to breeze through what we got right here. So, obviously, I have been playing Killing Floor 2. I've been talking about it forever. Been following this game closely. If this game were a girl, she would probably have a restraining order against me by now. That's an Emilio analogy right there. Yeah.
Okay.
But it finally came out, and I picked it up. And within 10 or 15 minutes, I was like, yep, this is exactly what I wanted. This is exactly what I expected. I'm very happy with this purchase. If you played Killing Floor 1, it's everything that I love about Killing Floor 1, and it's better. The graphics are better. The gameplay is better. The perk system is better. It's just a big improvement on that, and it's just very enjoyable. But what I thought to myself as I'm playing this game is... like a mode. It's like a mode of a game. It feels like a piece of a game. And I said the same thing about Evolve when I first played that. Mm-hmm. You know, Evolve feels like it's just they took one mode. You know, Call of Duty has their zombie mode.
It's where, like a survival mode.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Survival. There's just waves and waves of zombies and you have to kill them. And that's exactly what Killing Floor 2 is. So I thought to myself, why am I having so much fun with Killing Floor 2? Like, I literally come home and I'm like, I have stuff to do, but I'm gonna play this game. It's
like the video that we're supposed to be putting out.
Yeah this video
like just for instance
for like 4 weeks.
Oh yeah. That exactly.
He actually just forgot it.
I literally forgot about
his eyes were shifting around like what the fuck are they talking
seriously.
About
the Broforce video.
The Broforce video.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But okay. But Evolve, I played for an hour, and I was like, I don't like this. And
boom!
I knew right away. And I think what it is about Killing Floor 2 is that, you know, Evolve is, there's a lot of downtime. There's a lot of chasing people around, chasing around the monster, trying to get to him and corner him, and then a fight initiates. And Killing Floor 2 is like it's like Team Fortress 2. It's constant action. I mean, there's a few lulls when you go and you buy your equipment and you upgrade, but then it's just massive hordes of zombies, and you have to kill as many as you can over and over again.
How much
and,
time between waves?
Like a minute.
Yeah, so they give you a minute to run to the trader, get your weapons, and then you're back in it.
Oh, you have to run to a guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's not the same one every time, so you gotta actually find the location.
You have to seek him out.
Yeah, you have to seek him out.
But they tell you exactly where to go.
But question, so I played a game that's similar to this where dinosaurs come at you. And you can set up your controls, and then the dinosaurs come at you, and you gotta protect your like electrical systems or whatever.
Hmm.
And I guess my question is,
can I get a name? Because that sounds awesome.
Yeah, I'm trying to. I'm blanking on it. I think I played it with some. I think I played it with some listeners a while ago.
Well, you're just making shit up at this point.
Yes, I guess.
No, no, guys, there's this game, and you have a machine gun.
Cut this whole
and
thing.
Shooting at T-Rexes.
I think I know the game. It's Orion Dino Horde.
Yeah, yeah, okay. That's the one. What makes this game good and Orion Dino Horde not good?
Yeah, Bobby.
What's the difference between this and a game like that?
I played a little bit of Dino Horde. I liked it to a certain extent. It's not nearly as bad as a lot of people made it out to be on its first release, but it has a much larger map. It's got vehicles. There's a lot more weapons to upgrade to. I don't know. Killing Floor 2 just feels like a much tighter experience. I mean, okay. It is just nonstop action with this, and it's so compact that I feel like the challenge is learning how to spend your time, because it takes a while to reload. It takes a if you heal yourself, you can't run. There's always way more zombies to kill than you can handle if you're playing on the correct difficulty, that is. So you really have to know which zombie you're taking out too, because there's different kinds. The diversity in the enemies is really cool too.
Yeah,
I mean, they have their normal guys. They have these dudes that are a little bit stronger. They have these big, they call them skrates, these big beefy dudes with a chainsaw for a hand. And if you play the game,
like a samurai dude or something with a sword, right? That kind of like charges.
Yeah, he's like the second tier guy. He's,
and then they got the little crawling guys at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the Which skrate guy of really? This podcast.
The fat dude. Yeah. Okay.
Is he fat?
Shit. Yeah. Fuck. Yeah, he is.
They got a lot.
And then they got the poisoned. Okay.
Yeah, it's basically like the boomer from Left 4
Side
Dead.
Note. I played this on your,
mm-hmm. But you only played single player.
I only played,
which is not.
I played one round single player just to get an achievement, and I was like, it's not even the same game when you play by yourself. Like, it is.
All I'm saying is, I got my ass fucking kicked. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. I was playing the commando, which there's no hold trigger to shoot. It's a 3-fire burst when you start off.
Well, it
right?
depends on what gun you have. Yeah, that's the first gun,
like the default gun, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what's going on? I'm headshotting this dude, and the head's popping off, and the dudes still aren't dead yet. They just keep coming at you.
The headshots are so satisfying in this game. You hear, even if, like the Skrakes, you can headshot them a million times, and they still won't die. Like, they take a lot of damage, but you hear that. You hear a distinct audio sound.
What's it sound like?
That's kind of redundant, audio sound. But you hear a distinct sound when you get a headshot.
Impression?
Like popcorn popping.
It's like a wet crunch. Yeah. Nah, not quite like that. but yeah, and then when the weak guys, if you get a headshot, their head just pops right off, but they still keep coming at you. They will eventually fall dead if you don't shoot them.
So in single player, I was getting some slow-mo every once in a while. Mm-hmm. Does that not occur in multiplayer, or does that occur
no,
in multiplayer?
No, it does. Oh, they call that Zed time, and that's a big part of the game, and I think that adds a lot of fun to it as well.
Yeah, because that was cool. How do you get that going?
It's like a bullet time effect like other games. You can't initiate it. It happens randomly.
Yeah.
But what's different about their bullet time, or they call it Zed time, you aren't faster. You can look around normally, like at your normal speed, but you can't shoot or reload or do anything else quicker than you normally would be able to. But it does give you, it slows things down, so it allows you to line up shots. I obviously play the medic a lot because I always end up in that role. And usually when that ever happens, I try to heal my teammates because it's a great time for me to get, you can shoot healing darts as a medic. But it lets you line up these shots, get a few headshots, or like at least just look around. A lot of times I'll get stuck in a reload. Like, I'll just go to reload, and that'll take a good second or two. And then Zed time will start, and that's pretty much all I can do during that slow-mo effect. So I'll just take that moment to look around and say, okay, we got enemies coming there. My guys are getting cornered there. I'm going to go over here and, you know, line up some shots on
how
these
do your
guys.
Teammates perceive you if you're in Zed time? Like,
you're everything just,
everybody
down.
Slows down. Yeah. The entire game goes
yeah,
slow-mo.
It goes
so
slow-mo.
If one person hits it, everybody hits it?
Well, it's
you
not
can't,
like
you can't
triggered.
Initiate it. Yeah.
So, like, when I was playing the Commando, which is like their assault version, like the damage dealer, if you were lining up some zombies, a lot of times it would go into it, right? Because that's what kind of what the game tells you to do is like, try to line the enemies
oh,
up.
Oh, there's mm-hmm. triggers. It's not yeah, caused by time or damage?
Yeah, I think it's triggers that cause
I think when
it.
There's a certain... I don't know if there's a certain number of enemies on the map that trigger it or what exactly causes it
there
to
are
happen.
Triggers, though. It's not timed.
I don't know.
DL Gaming, where we have all the answers.
And none of the questions.
To me, it just seems completely random. Like, there's always one kind of at the beginning of the round, then you get a few here and there. The Commando, the way the perk system works is every level that you gain, you get a stat boost, and it boosts stats that are relevant to your role. And every five levels, you get to choose a perk. You get an option between one or two, and you can change them at any time. But for the Commando... one of his stat boosts is that he adds a second to Zed time. So he can increase it, but I don't think there's any way to actually trigger it. Not that I know of.
What I thought was cool in this game, which is different than other survival modes, is I feel like most survival modes, they're about killing and not about surviving. It's like, how can you kill the wave before it gets to me? And I felt like when I was playing this game, obviously I only played in single player, but I felt like... the enemies getting to me was not the end of my turn. You know what I mean? Like,
what do you mean? If you die, you get to go spawn?
No, you don't die when they hit you. Like, when I was playing single player, it was 20 hits to kill me. And I was meleeing and, you know, doing things to survive.
You didn't seem super weak, or you didn't feel weak.
Exactly. I felt like they were going to get me.
Yeah.
The question is, what can I do once they hit me?
Is that how it is in multiplayer, Pop?
Yeah, it's basically the same thing in multiplayer. When they reach you, you can always turn around and run. You can weld doors shut to give yourself a little more of an advantage and kind of control the flow of zombies. And when you're playing with a group, you can play with up to six people. So when you're playing with a group that big, the smart players will look for, okay, what point is not covered? Or what's my role? Am I a berserker? Okay, so I should be meleeing the enemies that get close to my teammates. And you get rewarded. You get XP for doing things that are relevant to your role. And, of course, I love roles in games, too. I love when you have, like, characters. Like, I am a medic. I am supposed to heal. That's my job. And I'm going to do that really well. As opposed to there's just a bunch of commandos on the field, and we just got to kill as many things as we possibly can.
The other thing that I noticed is when we were looking at Killing Floor 2, both you and I brought up the graphics.
Yeah.
When I got into this game, and granted, you know, we can talk about this a little bit on the next thing, but when I got into the graphics, I had no issue with the graphics. They looked really good.
Nice.
There was a snow level, and the snow is coming down, and there's all sorts of things. Like... yeah. It didn't feel like a game from a couple years ago. It felt like, okay, this game just came out.
Some games look good in screenshots, and then you play them, and they look terrible. Kind of like Nether. Like, that looked great in screenshots, but when we played it, looked like shit. But Killing Floor 2...
like shit? Did you think
no,
it
I looked
shit?
I mean,
it,
my PC
it was pretty
looked
bad.
Like shit, so...
Nether was pretty bad. It had, like, those two-dimensional, like, leaves and grass or, like, building parts. Yeah, it was... it was not a really good game. And the character animations can change
Bobby,
a lot,
when
too.
You're in a Ferrari, grass looks like shit. It's just like you're going by way too fast. Yeah. We were like, hey, this is kind of nice.
There's grass here.
But Bob, let me bring this up real quick.
Okay.
In games, you usually take the healer role. Mm-hmm. In PC gaming, he also does that.
Yeah.
Like, my rig broke. Bobby came over. He told me what I could salvage.
Yeah, he's a...
what he gets. Like, this is what he does. He's kind of like a IT. He comes and fixes shit. He knows everything.
It's like he should have a job in IT. That's
it's
like,
almost yeah, like that.
It's yeah, almost yeah, yeah, like he should
almost
have.
Almost like I should work yeah, with computers.
It's kind of yeah, crazy that he picks the same role in games. You would yeah, think.
Yeah. No, that's funny. It's, I think a lot of people do that though. They pick roles that that they kind of fill in their everyday life too.
Not the women I've dated.
Okay.
Managers. Okay, never mind.
Let's not start. Let's not get into that. One more thing on Killing Floor 2, though. If you go to the community hub on Steam and look at some of the screenshots, people have been modding some of the configuration files to increase the body count. I think it starts with 50. You can have up to 50 bodies on the ground. People right, have put that up to 500 and took screenshots, geez, and it just looks so gnarly.
But do the new mobs have to crawl over those bodies? Because that was my big thing.
No, there probably is collision, because I do see it. Like, you can shoot the dead bodies and they twitch around, or I don't know if it interferes with the gameplay in any way. Or
that's what Left 4 Dead needed, was like, all these bodies needs to pile up for it to be more realistic, and also maybe some sort of obstacle that you have to deal with.
There was a modification for Left 4 Dead 2 where you could turn the common infected into the xenomorphs, and when you did that, they would die and their tail would point straight up, and there was collision on it, so you couldn't, people would get stuck on that, and it, you kill, you know, there's a million zombies in Left 4 Dead 2, so you get enough of those.
Wait, was that intentional though?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
But it was just a problem with that particular
mod. But it would be. If, okay, so in a standard Left 4 Dead 2 map, you probably kill 200 to 600 zombies. I'm just throwing numbers out there.
Ballparking it.
Yeah, ballparking it. Those bodies would stack up, yeah, and they would be create. I mean,
it'd be like a 300 scene where they fucking are trying to climb yeah, over their fucking wall. That wall, and
they,
yeah,
yeah, they dump that wall on top of the
yeah,
bad guys.
Exactly.
Yeah. So if there's a Left 4 Dead 3, developers, you're listening, that's what we need. Body collision.
Like, and by developers, you mean
cocks and yeah, yeah, all kinds of shit just raining down yeah, on you. Yeah, you can't get around that.
All right. So, Chad, you had an interesting week today.
Yes, I did.
Yep.
And by interesting,
why'd you just pray to Mecca? Right?
I was had a sneeze and then it went back up in the system. Oh, so my highlight, I mean, my week went like this. So early on in the week, I was looking around in Steam, found a game I wanted to play, bought it, started downloading it. My fucking system, my PC crashed.
Last like, weekend you said about that. You were like, yeah, my shit might not last till next week. So how can I play anything to talk about?
Yeah. So that happened. Long story short, my rig would not run for more than 10 minutes without crashing. I got Bobby to come over here this weekend. We took a look at it. And if you guys know my rig, obviously Amelia posted up on the hardware. I'm running with two hamsters on a wheel, and they're running the hardware. And then
well, the graphics are integrated.
No, so yeah, one of them is really smart, and he draws out what the graphics are going to be for. So I got a hamster that's drawing while he's trying to run on the wheel. So
it's tough.
Yeah, Bobby took a look at it. Long story short, my hard drive crashed. So I'm like, all right, we're going to get an upgrade. So Bobby recommends the what is it? Samsung.
Can I bring up that my computer was taken apart in order to find out that yours yeah, was falling apart?
We didn't take it apart. We just plugged some things into it.
Oh, okay. When I came home,
we used it like a whore. We just used its holes. We didn't use.
There was a lot more transistors just hanging around than there usually are.
But they came out with two extra screws that we don't know where they came from.
Okay.
So, anyways, Samsung 850 Evo 500 gig solid state drive, $220 bought.
Boom.
And then
dollars like boom.
Yeah. We got to get a new graphics card. So GTX 970 bought, put this rig in, set it up this weekend. So according to 3D Mark, I went from
woo.
Woo. So my previous rig was I scored about 2600 about. So,
yeah.
And now my current rig is scoring about 9700, which is above the high end gaming
median
rig on the thing,
which I think 3D Mark puts in there to make you feel better about yourself.
I did jerk off twice to it, yeah. So I'm excited. Thank you, Bobby, for helping me out.
Well, you know what's interesting is that the SSD is not really going to affect the 3D Mark score. So essentially, all you did was replace your video card. You went from an AMD
7700.
I know the exact model. 7700. It's the Radeon 7700. Oh!
Yeah.
Like, I can't get that last part out.
It was choking.
Terrible.
Yeah.
We looked it up, dude. Bob, we looked it up. So he was trying to do a comparison in a joke. Like, mm-hmm. I recommended the 970.
Or the 970.
And I said, you should buy this. And he's like, well, let me compare it to my... And as a joke, he brought it up, right? First of all, he couldn't find it on the site.
Right? It was so old that he wasn't able to
The site that compares graphics cards couldn't even find anything. So he typed them both in. And what came out was pure magic.
Yeah. It was basically the comparison, comparing a rotary phone to a cell phone. Yeah. Like, it skipped two generations. But yeah, so that's what I'm running right now. And I am in a constant state of arousal the whole time I'm playing video games at this point, moving forward. All these games that I've said sounded cool, but I have no interest in playing, i.e. my comp won't play it, I'm now deciding I should be playing.
Yeah.
Wolfenstein New Order, which was both of your guys' game of the year last year. I got that downloaded. What else did I...
How this might look compared to... I mean, was there a noticeable... You need to upgrade your monitor. You really do.
It was more noticeable in the frame rate. Like, I went from like 30 frames to 60 frames.
Right.
And I went from medium end to ultra. So I went from medium 30 frames to ultra 60 frames.
Fortunately, it didn't affect your skill.
Yeah.
We played last night and
it was terrible.
I think he was used to playing, like, you were used to the 30 frames. Yeah. 60 frames is a bit much. Hey, guys, don't come all at me at once.
Yeah.
Can we slow this down?
Yeah. I still have some work to do. But I have the rig to support this, so...
Nice. Yeah, Wolfenstein New Order is going to be one of those games that I replay once I upgrade my monitor and graphics card.
Lies. You can't even play new games that you want to play.
Well, I will be playing the old blood. No, I have my gaming...
This is Wolfenstein. This is Bobby's favorite series of all time, so he will be playing this game.
Yeah,
that'll happen. I'll probably even play Return to Castle Wolfenstein, because I never played that one.
If only we could all quit our jobs and just play games.
Yeah, that would be nice.
More than tell your friends.
So when you played The Secret World, because you played that this
week. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Did and you I play that before
up.
Or
no,
after?
No.
Okay.
The Secret World was what I was trying to download when my whole PC fucking...
And that's a very large game, and you probably were using up space on that hard drive. Because when we tested it, it had a ton of bad sectors. Hard Disk Sentinel is a software that we used, if anyone's looking to test, or if you're wondering what the condition of your hard drive currently is right now.
So we basically set that up as an external hard drive and gave it a check.
Yeah.
There was failures everywhere on that one. So... Now, if Bobby, if a listener has $300 to spend, are you putting in the solid state hard drive, the 500 gig, or are you putting in the 970?
Yeah, that's a tough call. It depends on what their graphics card is already at the moment. I mean, if they're gaming, then the 970 is going to be a better choice. But the thing about the SSDs, once you use one, you will probably never go back. You'll go to work or other people's houses, and you'll think there's something wrong with their computer because it's running so slow.
You know, it's ridiculous. Like, I used to turn my computer on, go into the kitchen, make myself a sandwich, come back, and it's still got the Windows loading screen. Now, how long was that, Emilio? It was like literally 10 seconds from... I restarted my comp, and it was literally... 10 seconds to go from beginning to end?
What I heard, it's longer than your weekly love life.
Yeah.
So,
two sex sections with me or one boot sequence. So, like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And you were surprised at the size and weight of it, too.
Oh, my God.
Well. These SSDs literally weigh as much as a credit card.
Yeah, like your cell phone. Like, your cell phone weighs more than this.
Yeah, and your cell phone is bigger than these. But while we were picking this up, we went to Fry's. Instead of Amazon, they price match, so you got a great deal. But while you were doing that, I wandered off and played a Call of Duty 4, I think, Modern Warfare demo on a 4K monitor. First time I've ever played a game on 4K. And man, it looked crisp, especially in the text and the any sort of typing or print on there looked so crisp. The tearing was fucking horrendous, though.
Well, it wasn't a rig designed to do 4K, right?
Oh no, it was a gaming rig. Like it was beefed up. I looked in there; they didn't have that great. They had like a 750 Ti, so it didn't have like an amazing graphics card. But it looked really crisp, and I don't know if the monitor was ideal for it anyway. I think it was a Samsung 4K, but
we were looking at both an Acer and a Samsung.
They were 4K. Setting that shit up, and they were like, "I don't know where this cord goes." And they called Charlie. Charlie's in the back. Charlie works, you know, receiving. So he does a little warehouse work. So well, he put it together, and that's what they.
I
came
didn't
up
configure
with.
Much in the options, like turn up anti-aliasing, which you probably wouldn't even need at that.
Wait,
resolution
you were doing
anyway.
That? You were in their BIOS?
Not in the BIOS, no, in the settings of the
actual game.
Yeah, just trying to turn up all the eye candy here and there. But
they need to hire you, dude.
What's funny is whenever I'm in these stores and someone like comes up and tries to like you know ask if they can help me or like if I had any questions.
Can I help you?
You help me? That's funny. No. Yeah, I'm good.
Let me adjust this for you.
It's not even funny. You come out with a belly laugh. Sir, can I help you? Like you look.
I wouldn't be a dick like that. I totally wouldn't. But sometimes, like with some of the more pushy salesmen, yeah, they'll start giving me the spiel or something about like why I need to upgrade this or that. I'm like, and I play dumb. I'm like, oh, really? Video games, you say? Yes, interesting. It's always fun. I rarely find myself in like a Best Buy or a Fry's anymore these days.
So it goes from a smirk to a smile to a cackle.
To a maniacal laugh.
Yeah.
So related to my install, we were going to put Windows 8 on. We ended up putting Windows 7. Obviously, Windows 10 is coming out shortly. The question I have is 7 or 8. If from a pure gaming, take everything out from, you know, how it looks and how it responds. From a pure gaming standpoint, if I want to have the best game experience I can, is it Windows 7 or Windows 8?
I don't think... Do both of them just... why am I asking you guys?
Yes, seriously.
I can't remember. G-Sync XR9 240? Oh, yeah, totally, Bob.
I'm pretty sure Windows 7 supports DirectX 11. I'd have to double-check that. But as far as gaming goes... That's really your... It does?
I'm pretty sure it does.
Because you have Windows 7... No, you have Windows 8.
Well, only on your recommendation. And this is why we're going to have this discussion. Because I am a little... This is the only time you've ever steered me wrong. Maybe because I'm a baboon. Windows 8 didn't
Racist.
Work out.
Oh, sorry. Continue.
Windows 8 didn't work out. I don't like it. I was having way better time with Windows 7. And I think that's a general consensus too.
What is it about Windows 8 that you don't like?
Buttons that I don't know about and like areas that I've never been and usually that's cool things, you know, like I'm exploring and... Yeah. But
it's different. Windows 8, they changed a few things.
It was set up for like touchscreens, and I don't have a touchscreen. So I feel, you know, like that entire... Everything that's dedicated to any touchscreen-ness... Touchscreen
accessibility.
Touchscreen shun.
Okay. Touchscreen shun.
Anything dedicated to that is just lost processing. I mean,
well, these functions aren't like built in there to. I don't think there's anything extra.
I don't
that's
have
running.
Any apps on my computer. I have programs. Why would you get me something that processes apps? Why do I have to go to an app store? Why
well, the do apps I have aren't to get running. Them? You don't need to go. I never go to the Microsoft store. I don't run any apps either. You don't have to run those.
What?
You don't have to run the apps.
No, I'm the playing full dumb. Screen. Yeah, okay. I don't. But every once in a while, it does.
And
come
Windows
up.
10 is going to have apps too, and they're going to have a lot of the same things that Windows 8 did, but they changed the start menu, so everybody's happy.
So
let's hope.
How about we take it this way? Windows 10 is coming out shortly.
Mm-hmm.
The best way to get prepped for it, should they be using Windows 7 or Windows 8?
Windows 8, definitely. I don't know. I always use the latest, whatever it may be, and you just got to learn to adapt. I think it's healthier to adopt the new operating system. I mean, I've been using Windows since, like, 3.1, I think. And every time a new one comes out, people are just like, psh, I don't know about this operating system. You need Windows 98. And then people are like, nope, this one sucks. You got to use Windows XP. And, you know, obviously Vista was pretty bad.
Every other version is good.
Really, the only bad versions of Microsoft of Windows that I have really not liked was Vista and ME. And those were the only two. And that was because I actually had, like, technical problems with them. If something looks different, if there's a start screen instead of a start menu, whatever, I will learn to use that instead of the old method. But people tend to, like, I work with kids, like, around the 10 to 13-year-old age.
Emilio and I aren't kids.
Okay.
But that's my point.
So I work with kids around the 10 to 13-year-old age, and they have absolutely no problem with Windows 8. If I tell them, okay, we're going to go to the control panel, click on start, control panel, they look at me like, start? What's start? They don't know what the start button is because they never used Windows XP. They stopped calling it the start button after that.
What do they call it?
The Windows button. It's just like a Windows icon on the bottom left corner. So, you know, it's really just like whatever you learned first and got comfortable with. And that's all it is. People are just very, I don't want to say fearful of change, but they're comfortable in what they've already learned and they don't want to relearn. But I don't know.
So, the end of the day, 7 or 8, it won't affect my gaming once it gets beyond the actual Windows setup.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be any difference gaming-wise, whether you're on Windows 8 or Windows 7.
Okay, well, but you're hooking me up with Windows 8.
He took gaming out of the equation. He said utilitarian aspect alone. I think that's Windows 7 is way... Okay, there might be stuff under the hood. For the average user, though, it's way easier.
You just don't like Windows 8. That's what it comes down to.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
But you've been using it for like 6 months.
Because he gave it to me. I paid him.
You sound
for
like
it.
An old crotchety man right now. goddamn, get off my lawn, motherfuckers.
It's not that kind of thing.
You look like Clint Eastwood on Gran Turismo right now.
I'm all about, like, I adapt very quickly to anything that's better. But if it's not better, why adapt?
No.
That's the way I look at it.
Because it is better. You damn kids
and your crazy music.
No, your problem is, you don't think it adapted better in ways that you want it to work. But it did get better, just not in the ways that you want it to be better.
I'll put it to you this way. My girl just bought the Surface Pro 3. She loves it. She uses it in Windows mode, not in the app touchy mode that it came with. So, why they came up with this.
Okay.
You know, so there you go. Well, and she's not familiar with Windows. It's not because that's what she's used to.
Well, she used a Mac for a long time. Yeah. Now she's coming over to Windows.
And the only thing she knows about Windows is watching me manipulate my Windows. So, and that's what she uses. And I tried for a whole 7 minutes.
That's a lot.
To show her how the appy...
I'm going to use Windows 8, and I'm going to figure it out, and I'm going to like it.
Wow.
Because I'm not an old man like you are.
When I did computer repair, we had a client that refused to use anything but Windows 8. And this is back in 2008 or 9.
Windows 8 was out in 2000?
Windows 98.
Oh.
That's the only operating... And he would always talk about how it was the best operating system and why did they ever change it and... You know, just stuck on that. And I never forget that, dude, because that's what I think of every time people are just like, nope, last one was better. And people are jumping on board with 10. Sure, it's going to be good. But I think people, you know, it's going to be a lot more like 8 than most people think.
Yeah, which is why I want to learn 8. Because I haven't used 8 before.
Yeah. Well, we could argue that point forever and ever.
Seriously.
So did you want to talk a little bit about the secret world?
Yeah. Okay. I will try to keep this short and sweet because this game's been out since 2012. But just recently, it went from a subscription model to a free model. You can get it on Steam right now for $20, and it's just a $20 buy, and you get to play it. I'm not sure if there's like extras that you have to... But anyways, I picked it up. I've been itching for an MMO. I've been itching for something different. I didn't want to start playing WoW again. I almost started playing WoW again, and I wanted to play something different. So I picked up Secret World. Modern day, I loosely say MMO because I don't feel it is like an MMO. I feel like it's a single-player game with multiplayer elements to it.
Kind of like Guild Wars 2?
Yeah, I really think it's a lot like Guild Wars 2. honestly.
Well, do you think like the group? Well, I don't know. Guild Wars 2, the combat was really heavily based on other people, right? Like you could cast something and someone else could cast something on top of that, and there's a synergistic effect.
Is that in Guild Wars 2?
Really?
Yeah, Guild Wars 2.
No, I want to say EverQuest 2 had that.
EverQuest 2 did, but I think Guild Wars 2 did.
Yeah, well. Guild Wars 2 definitely did
okay,
as well.
Okay.
So, anyways, I'm having a fucking blast with this game. But I want to preface this by saying, if you're looking for an MMO, this might not necessarily be the game for you. If you're looking to power level or get as high level as quickly as possible, this isn't maybe necessarily for you. This game is about, there's a ton of puzzles, and there's a ton of like, reading and lore and a ton of like, if you want to just have a good experience and with your own character looking around and exploring, this game is really fucking cool. For example, they have a built-in browser that you can literally bring up a internet browser and they tell you, hey, you can bring this up and search for answers here. So let me tell you an example. I go into this guy's, there's zombies invading in this one town. And I go into this guy's clinic. And I go to his computer and it asks me for a password. And it gives me it gives me two hints. Music for the season and 1723. That's all it gives me. There's nothing else in game that gives me answers. So, there's two things I could do. I could go to IGN and look just for the answer. What is the password for this? Or I could go into the browser and start trying to figure out what these two hints actually mean. So
wait. I'm a little confused. So there's a browser within the game.
Yeah.
But it does not give you the direct answer.
No. It's just a browser, like an internet browser. You can just use an internet browser in the game,
like their own.
Well, it's.
It's like a
like,
proxy.
Like Google. No. It goes to the real browser. You can search up... You can probably go to Pornhub if you want
to. So why wouldn't the IGN
it does come up? It does pop up. If you search for it, it will pop up.
Okay.
And you can select it if you want. Or you can play the game as it's meant to be played and try to figure it out on your own.
Oh, okay.
So I went to the Wikipedia for music... in 1723, and I start looking through this. And I'm like looking through this. Spoilers, by the way, if you ever get to this one section of this.
It's early on. Yeah. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Go ahead.
So, Bach is doing one thing, and he's doing a presentation. Anyways, I get to the end, and Vivaldi does a Music of the Seasons. And so I type in Vivaldi, and it's the answer. And that's what this game is about. It's about if you want to make this a puzzle game, you can make this as much as you want fun. Like, you can make this as challenging as you want it to be. You know? And that's what I really appreciate about this game, is you can get the answer. You can go to IGN, and the answer will be right there popped up if you want. And you can try to rush through everything, and you can try it. Like, you go to WoW normally, and you're just trying to cruise through levels and try to get to 90 or 100 as quick as you can. It's not about that in this game. It's about looking for and finding answers yourself and figuring out.
So you can, let me see if I can summarize this. In WoW, you have to put in the work. There's no other option because you just got to do it. Maybe there's something.
And the same thing is true here.
Okay.
Because you get skill points and you get action and you get ability points and you got to put those in and you got to level up and everything like that. But it's encompassed in this idea that, for example, they've got these like tiers on their quests, and some quests have up to 15 tiers, basically 15 steps to finish this quest. And sometimes they don't give you the next point. It's not like WoW where they point you to the next point.
Right.
Sometimes they'll give you a sheet and you get to look at it and it'll be like, okay, based on the sheet, where are you supposed to go next? And you're just supposed to figure it out. Like there's no hint. It doesn't point you to a direction. There's no waypoint.
Like Vanishing of Ether Carter. It's not going to hold your hand. Figure it out for yourself.
It is a lot of figure it out for yourself.
Right.
And I have had to go to IGN because I've been like lost. Like, what is this asking for?
Wow, I just lost so much respect for you.
But the point is, the way the puzzle system works is really cool for an MMO. And I don't even, like I said, I don't even consider this an MMO. I consider this a puzzle game, a single player game with multiplayer elements.
If I were to guess, I don't know, I'm not on that side, but maybe the hardest thing to do in game development, as far as the content side of it, is getting puzzles hard enough that they won't make somebody walk away, and not hard enough where they won't laugh at the simplicity. That's got to be the hardest thing. Like, you're dealing with different intelligence levels, problem-solving abilities. Yeah. So this is. It sounds like you know that the escape's there if you want it, but then you're also dealing with your own self-guilt, maybe, if you're doing it.
It really comes down to how much work you want to put in, how much reward you want. And this permeates through throughout the entire game. I'll give you another example. I go into this like single player area, and there's like traps and stuff, and I just keep fucking dying, and until I realize that I'm going the wrong way and I got to figure it out. I could go into IGN and figure out exactly how to get through it, but like if you see this system, you got to figure it out. Another example.
This episode brought to you by IGN.
Another example is, there was a quest where you had to follow birds. And so I hit the first bird, and the bird just flies off. And I'm like, fuck, that bird just left. Like, I have no idea where that bird went. Right. So I tried once or twice and failed out. And then I realized, I'm just going to run in that direction until I hit something else. Oh, and I found some more birds. Oh, and then it flies off. It doesn't hold your hand. It expects you to take the next logical step. And I really appreciate that about games. And so, like, this game is, I'm having so much fun with this game. It does have the, you know, different kind of structures where you can play pistols or you can play chaos magic. So it's got the whole, like, MMO structure.
Is there
structure.
A lot of combat in this game, the Secret World?
There is.
I saw more running around than, but that's all MMOs.
Yeah.
More running around than.
There's minions all over the place. If you want to fight them, you can fight them.
And they're like people that got turned into zombies.
Well, I'm in the beginning level, so I'm in the zombie level, so that's what I'm facing. So you can do that if you want, but just grinding like Amelia would do, that doesn't get you anything other than action points. It doesn't progress the level, the story. The other thing that's cool on this game is you have a limited number of quest inventory. So you've got one main story quest. You've got like three side quests is all you can get. So you can't just go to hubs and get 27 quests and go out and do them all and then come back. You've got to know what you want to do and do that. It's kind of a cool, interesting concept. Like, this isn't about trying to get through the content as quickly as possible. This is about enjoying the content, and I appreciated that.
We could say a bunch of things about the Secret World, but this is what I'm going to tell you. I went to bed at 2 a.m. Playing. I knew the chat was up with 2 a.m. and I had to interrupt the Secret World at 10 a.m. 10 p.m. so that we could play some Smite. I went to bed at 2 p.m. I woke up. He was up at 7 a.m. playing Secret World. So,
yeah,
I had to interrupt the Secret World to play Smite. Then he was doing it at 7 a.m. So he's addicted. So take it for what it's worth. He doesn't love many things, but he loves this game.
Yeah. Have you guys played, Bobby? Have you played?
I played about 15 minutes of the Secret World.
I really need to get you to play.
Yeah. And it comes very highly recommended by some other people.
Well, there was no IT class, so he found that very disturbing.
that's tough.
All right, and on to listener questions. I think we got two this week. First one, David is winning, was talking about mechanical keyboards. Now, I know he's already bought one.
This is, and to preface this is on the hardware thread that we have in there, which I will be updating now that I have a beast rig. I will be updating the thread with my rig specifications, but it was a side note on it. So go ahead, Bobby.
Okay, I'm actually going to pull it up here because he did end up getting a mechanical keyboard. There was a good article that somebody had posted too, and it was to Tom's Hardware. Article's like 4 or 5 years old, but it's still very relevant on how mechanical keyboards work and what the differences between the different colors, brown, blue, red,
Chad almost punched us last time we brought up mechanical. A keyboard's a keyboard.
Yeah, what the fuck? Why do I care
maybe you
about
read
keyboards?
This article, man, before the podcast.
Give me the summary, Bobby. Why do I care about keyboards? Is a keyboard not a keyboard?
In one word or less.
In half a word or less. Go.
I don't know. It's really a matter of preference, but after using mechanical keyboards for years, I can't go back to any other type. And you really have to find one that's comfortable. I think Clown Lotion said he uses a Razer Black Widow, and I've used that one before, and I like that. I use a DOS keyboard currently, and that's mostly because I just like not having any print on the keyboards. It looks
cool. Okay, buddy. Yeah. Okay. When you say DOS keyboard, like it has nothing to do with it being mechanical.
No, no. It is a mechanical keyboard.
Right.
Now, it has the Cherry MX Brown keys, which are similar to the blue ones, which I've used in the past, except they don't click. The brown are the quiet ones. And they have much more of a tactile feel. I don't know. It depends on what you're doing with it. Are you typing? Are you gaming?
It sounds like somebody talking about fucking ecstasy to me at this point. It's like, what pill are you taking? Is the brown or the blue or the green? Does it even matter? Like, the mouse seems like the prominent part of the mouse keyboard combination. Is that am I wrong here?
They're all binary. It's either on or off, like we talked about last week, because there's no force feedback, according to Bobby.
Well, now, if you look at the keyboards, the article on the mechanical keyboard, certain ones have more resistance, so it may take 40 grams of pressure as opposed to 80. And a lot of mechanical keyboards have different pressure required depending on the key, whether it be the space bar or tap. I don't know. These are all very specific details that the majority of people aren't going to know. Now, me, I spend a lot of time on my computer. So when you spend a lot of time on the computer, the mouse, the keyboard, the monitor, those are the things that you're interfacing with. You're constantly looking at it, and you have your hands on them, and you're using them. So it's pretty important. And I don't know. For me, I can tell a difference, and it's a big deal, but the majority of people are... Yeah, I don't know if it makes all that much of a difference.
I do agree with you. It's 50% of the way that you interact with your PC physically. I don't know, but I think humans are adaptable, whatever you put it. I mean, Chad's literally says Microsoft on it.
Yeah.
It came in a box with some sort of...
I think it was created before Microsoft. I think it was actually part of the Xerox before Microsoft bought the stuff. So I think it's actually...
But you're fine with it.
Yeah, I mean...
But also, you don't know what you're missing.
It's true.
All right, so we're going to wrap this up because we want to get to that interview. Check us out on dlgaming.net. That's our website. And you can get to our Twitter, YouTube, Steam group. Steam group is very active. That's the best way to reach us if you want to contact us. And yeah, let's get to this interview.
All right, guys, we're here with Chris Barasa, the creative director at Red Hook Games and the developers for Darkest Dungeon, one of our favorite games of this year.
I would say our favorite game.
Yeah.
Seriously. Wow. Okay, no, thanks.
Yeah. Every time that we say, you know, I love this game or something, because we play a lot of old games, but as far as anything from 2015 that we started playing this year, by far, this is our runaway hit.
Yeah.
I mean, we very rarely agree on things. Like, Bobby likes really gay stuff.
the Chad, 80s. He likes the 80s.
Oh, 80s. Oh, sorry. 80. Chad likes, I don't know what he likes.
And I like puzzle games.
Yeah, I like explosions. So it's very rare.
This covers everything.
Yeah, it's very rare that we all agree on something. And we all love this game.
Yeah.
So, first of all, yeah.
So the accolades aside... Let's get into some questions.
Now that we buttered you up, here comes the hard
hitting questions. Sure, here comes the other, the other hit.
So let's start us off. Talk a little bit about Red Hook itself. Like, how did you guys get together? How did you guys... Let's talk a little bit about Red Hook. So can you tell us what happened to get that started?
Sure. Red Hook is myself and my business partner, Tyler Sigmund. And he's a game designer. And we met at a studio in Vancouver it's got to be like 8 or 10 years ago. And we worked together on a couple projects and had a good kind of rapport. And then we just kind of, I mean, we stayed friends, but we went our separate ways professionally. Worked at different studios, different jobs. Time goes by. And, you know, we were always in touch. We'd play poker together. And we kept talking about, you know, it'd be great to work together one day. And all around us, the sort of indie thing was starting to rise up. And it became, you know, more and more of like a tangible reality. And then finally, the timing just lined up. And I said, you know, we'd been talking about this game where your adventurers, your heroes were very human and flawed and a lot like our management experiences of what happens to people under deadline pressure and that kind of thing. And, you know, it started out as like a little jokey thing, but then we'd kind of circle back to it and we'd, you know, have some scotch and talk about what a cool game it could be. So this was probably about, well, 3 or 4 years ago now. And so I'd do little sketches when I was, you know, I was freelancing for a while. So I'd just warm up some sketches and, it just kind of slowly took a little bit of shape. And then finally, when, you know, he had left his job and I had been laid off from this other gig that I was working at Microsoft. And we just kind of went out, had a whole bunch of drinks and just decided, let's just do it, you know?
First of all, what an amazing premise. I got, okay. So Link has been on all of these adventures, right? He's gone through, you know, Link from Zelda. He's gone through a million adventures. That dude's PTSD would be through the fucking roof. Yeah. Like, he could not come home and, like, his parents wouldn't know him. He would just, like, be twitching in the corner. So, like, it's amazing that you guys brought this up because it needed to be addressed. It's obviously there, and you guys, I'm so glad it came up on a drunken night because that's where all our ideas come from, but yours is so much better than ours, and kudos to that.
Oh, thanks. I don't know about that, but yeah, we just kind of hit on it, you know, oddly, as a result of, like, you know, I play, like, I try to have an MMO kind of going in the background of my life, you know, I just sort of like tinkering with characters and coming back to them, whatever, so...
Right.
But just the idea, you know, the sort of WoW art style, which is gorgeous, and I do really like it. But, you know, the seniority and veteranship is sort of indicated by the size of your shoulder pad. And just that you could give me the biggest shoulder pads in the world and, like, even, you know, like the simplest skeleton would have me shitting myself. So we just thought, you know, it's not about the size of the sword you have. It's about, you know, the person who's holding it, right?
Yeah.
And how mentally, you know, steeled they are and ready to face this challenge. Because otherwise, you know, it doesn't matter what you're wearing.
So would you say the mental stress kind of aspect of this game came about at the very beginning? Because this is a very unique part to your game. And it seems to me like part and parcel, like this is core to your game. So did this come right at the beginning or was this developed later on?
This was the game. This was the idea, the sort of central nugget. I mean, we have a lot of love and respect for the games that we grew up with, you know, those classic CRPGs, either The Beholder and Pool of Radiance and Baldur's Gate and, or Bard's Tale, that, you know, that kind of stuff. So we always wanted to, like, we were attracted to that genre, but you know, there's a lot of excellent games, really top tier stuff that does character visual customization and loot grinding better than we'll ever do, you know, with 2, 3, 4, 5 of us.
Yeah.
I'd love the hell out of Torchlight, Torchlight 2, Diablo, you know, like all that stuff.
Us too.
So we're like, look, if we're gonna do a dungeon game, it's got to be done differently, and this was the sort of central idea. Everything kind of grew out of this idea of fallible heroes that break under the mental pressure of being, you know, so far underground, paired up with a bunch of mercenaries that they probably have never met before. And you know, we were inspired by a lot of movies, like Aliens is a great example of that. It's like a group of people under extreme pressure, and some people crack and some people focus up, and ironically the civilian is the toughest of all, and you know, Hudson loses his shit.
Yeah. Game awesome. Over, man.
Yeah, exactly, game exactly. Over. Or like John Carpenter's The Thing.
Yeah.
The original one with Kurt Russell. That's just a bunch of dudes stuck in the North, really stressed out. And you watch the paranoia build and different people act out. And the drunk, you know, actually, this is his vehicle to sort of redemption a little bit. So we love those reversals and those kind of stories of what happened to people when they really tested.
Your crusader can totally crack under the pressure and become abusive, and your, like, dude that you weren't about, the leper, could be like, whoa, wait.
Suddenly he's a hero.
Suddenly, yes. It's everything's amazing, and I'm going to guide you guys through this.
So Darkest Dungeon came about before Red Hook came about? Is that what you're basically saying?
Yeah, I mean, we formed Red Hook to make Darkest Dungeon.
Okay.
Really, that's, you know... You know, Tyler and I have a laundry list of things we would love to do, but, I mean, this was why we actually spent the money and incorporated a company and gotcha. You know,
what does Red Hook mean exactly?
Well, it's from the H.P. Lovecraft story, The Horror of Red Hook.
Yeah.
Because the game is, you know, heavily influenced by Lovecraft, and we just thought it was a nice, nice homage, I guess.
Yeah, I just did the knowing, pretending like I knew what you were talking about, but I do know Lovecraft, so I was like, oh yeah, oh that one, yeah, I know that one, yeah.
That was a flawless knowing, I mean, I bought it.
Yeah, I know, cool. And the art, where exactly, obviously the art matches the feel of the game.
Yeah, really well.
How did that all come about? I mean, did you just start sketching this out, or?
And we noticed, like, on your DeviantArt, you definitely have different art styles that you have played around with, but this art fits it. Why did you pick this art style?
Well, I mean, I've been an artist for, well, it's been my career, I guess, but I've always gravitated towards, like, lead artist, art director, which is a different skill set than being, like, a ninja concept artist.
Yeah,
gotcha. So I've always felt like I'm a better art director than I am a concept artist. So I kind of took a hard look at my strengths and weaknesses when we started this, and I'm like, if I'm going to be the only artist, I need to be able to appeal to my art director brain so that I don't get locked on, like, stuck on one thing and overwork it, and it's never good enough. Yeah, so I needed to come up with an art direction that was, like, outside of myself, that I could, you know, measure the work against objectively and not get emotionally caught up in it, if that makes sense. And so I looked at the game, looked at what we wanted the tone of the game to be, and sort of, you know, some of my favorite comic book influences, medieval woodcuts, those really creepy drawings of witches getting boiled, you know, by Albrecht Dürer from the, you know, hundreds of years ago. I wanted the game to feel old. Like, I wanted it to almost feel like an illuminated manuscript that you were reading, and it's recounting these adventures, you know, almost.
Yeah, that's cool.
Everything that you were trying to hit, you hit.
Yeah, yes.
Everything you're saying, I'm like, oh, he's describing his game.
Yeah.
So what you wanted and what you did, I mean, it's the exact same thing. Great job on that.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks, man. I mean, that's always the quest, is that you know, when you're setting out to sort of carve an identity for a project, you want.
Now I built you up.
Do it as you can.
I built you up. Now I got to break you down a little bit.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Why is your game so hard, dude? Why is your game so hard? So, Chad just rebuilt his computer, and he had his first, like, couple of runs. He had to start all over, right?
Yeah.
And he's just as far as I am on my 40th run. You know,
wow.
Maybe he's smarter than I am. That could be it.
I don't know if it's about intelligence. I think, like, we ask a lot, and that's why we have that little disclaimer at the beginning of the game. A lot of games take the right hand road is very well traveled. You know, we slowly ramp you up. We tutorialize, you know, the first 2 hours of gameplay. We make sure that you feel good because you're succeeding a lot. And we just felt like the spirit of the game needs to sort of create in the players the same kind of stress and unknowingness that the characters themselves would experience. So we wanted to deliberately under-tutorialize. We wanted to sort of really make it punishing so that, you know, a lot of people they comment that the RNG is too wild. But actually, those comments sort of, they diminish as playtime increases, because you can definitely stack the odds in your favor. I can consistently beat the game.
I've heard that you have insider information, sir.
Yeah, no, but I mean, hey, like, my guys go crazy the same as everybody else.
So basically, what you wanted is to be the fifth. You want to be the fifth. The player is the fifth character on your party.
Exactly. And we want you to experience a little bit of that stress.
I love it, dude.
And that's why the game saves all the time. I mean, that's a very, very important feature. It doesn't work for every game. But for this game, what it does is that everything is a high-stakes poker game, because you could lose it all anytime. Yeah. So, like I mentioned, we played a lot of poker, and I liken the game spiritually to a game of poker. You're not always going to win. And sometimes you're going to start a dungeon, and you're going to have your best guys, and they're going to be really well-equipped. You're going to spend a lot of money. And on paper, you're thinking, I should win. I've done everything right. I've set everything up for success. Sometimes you just don't get the cards.
Yeah.
And so a good poker player knows how to fold a hand that they're attached to when they know it's going to lose. And a bad poker player keeps pushing forward, and they just hemorrhage cash. And so I've seen it on live streams. People are like, no, these are my best guys. This mission is, like, beneath them. Like, we totally got this. And you can just watch it unwind. They think it was, like, a move ago. It was like, you know, way back when the mission started that things actually started to go wrong.
It just made sense to me. I'm a terrible perk player. My friends call me the ATM machine.
Yeah.
So, I lost my entire A squad to something that I shouldn't have.
Yeah. The pig boss, right?
Yeah, the pig boss.
Yeah.
So, that's a great example. So you take your A squad into a boss fight. You're looking at it. You kill the little guy, let's say.
Yeah.
Right.
Wham! Everybody's stunned. You're like, okay, well, you know, right then you should run. Like, that's where you fold the hand.
Amelia didn't know there was a run option. I had to explain this to him.
And you know what? I'll take a bit of that on the nose because I think that the button isn't very visible.
I had no idea you could run during a fight.
Well, that's the idea. We want you to be able to fold your hand anytime you want.
Right.
Yeah. But now he knows this, and now he's going back in.
Yeah, but my A squad's gone, and I don't have a B squad, sir. Okay, I'm not upset. I'm not upset about any of this. So another thing I wanted to bring up with you, Chris, is I love this game. Chad loves this game. Bobby loves this game. A lot of our super fans that are very forthcoming, they all love this game. Offer our recommendation. By the way, we sold you a couple of copies.
Thanks.
Maybe two or three.
Yeah.
Great.
All I got to say about it is, you know, we're not playing it as much as I would play something up because it's so abusive. Like, I equate it to something like a really hot chick that's mean to you. Like, you keep going back, but then before you call her next time, you're like, oh, there's all that pain that's associated with that.
Right.
Yeah. Have you heard about this? It's almost like we love to hate it or we hate to love it, but...
Yeah, that's a great space to be in. I take that as a compliment.
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad you took it that way, man, because that was the only thing that I could say bad about your game. Not even bad. It's just a thing. Like, I'm confused about it, and I'm so glad that I've played it, and I will go back to it when I'm ready for some more abuse.
Well, I mean, part of it, too, right now is that, you know, being in early access, it's a bit of a treadmill. So, you know, you get your guys up, you beat the bosses. There's different difficulties. And, you know, if you're enjoying, you know, the tough experience, you can kind of have some bragging rights by beating, you know, all three bosses on all three difficulties. But we're very, very aware that, you know, we get you up and running and that's the best part of the game. And then you hit the treadmill because this is the content that we have available right now. So as we move through early access, we're going to start adding, you know, at the end of May, we've announced a big patch that we're going to add some characters and bosses, and then we're going to add another dungeon, and then, you know, when the game finally ships, you're going to be able to actually complete the story. And I think that that's going to give us a better sense of global balance and also give you a more compelling reason to kind of come back, because there'll be an end, so you're making progress towards the end. Even when you run away, you upgrade your town, you're that much better equipped to sort of push on to the end. So I think some of what you're experiencing is that sort of you don't know where it's going, if that makes sense.
No,
So to use your dating analogy, you don't know what the future holds. You know, maybe with this lovely lady that you're talking about. maybe so non-committal that there's no upside. But I think that, you know, the full game itself will sort of dangle that in front of you, and you're going to feel like you're making sort of progress on learning more about what's happening and gaining some mastery, and you're going to have a few more tools in your toolbox to work with. So I think some of that will alleviate, or at least, improve the experience, I guess.
And I think you guys hit it at the right time also with, you know, the success of like a Demon Souls and a Dark Souls, where you can get movement with a game that is very difficult and punishes the players, but rewards them so heavily once they get through those achievements, through those obstacles.
Yeah, I think I think all types of games should get made. So I don't want to say that, like, you know, our type of game is the only type of game that should exist. Not at all.
I do.
But if you want a pat on the back, you know, if you want someone to just like hug and kiss and cherish and hold you because you're a special snowflake, play a mobile game.
Yeah.
As long as you got your credit card, they will tell you that you're the greatest warrior in all the land. That's just how they.
Yeah.
You know, awesome, that's just how it works.
Quote of the podcast, man.
but you know, there should be another spectrum. There should be a game that frankly doesn't care if you play it or not, so that when you beat it, you feel like, yeah, fuck you. Like,
yeah.
And that's the game that we want to be. You know, and not every game I want to make ever in the rest of my life is going to be like this. But the same way the art style isn't everything I love about art, it's a few things. Mm-hmm. this game is, you know, philosophically, it's about a very constrained group of a few things. And I think that's what makes it a stronger product, because it's not trying to be everything. It's trying to be exactly what it is.
Yeah, I know we got so many things to hit on, but I mean, one of the greatest things that we have about your game is when your game came out early access, it felt like a fully fleshed out game.
Yeah,
like,
it did not feel early access at all.
Yes. If that would, if it didn't have that title on it at all, I would have not been upset with what I got. That I got a 100% ready to go product on day one. That's the way I felt. I feel like that's the way you must have felt. Like when people buy this, I guess you wanted them to get their money's worth or whatever it was. And I feel like a lot of developers don't feel that way, or maybe they're so hurting for money that they need to put something out that's really almost unplayable in order to just get it out there and get the revenue going. And I want to thank you personally that for what I paid for it, I feel like I got a full... If you never did another second of work, I'm good.
Awesome.
Did I name it enough ways?
We got a guy on Steam who's played like... I think it's over 100 hours, and he gave us a do not buy review.
Are you serious?
Wow, thanks,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. And by the way, he never beat the first boss.
Yeah,
so that's,
yeah,
that's
That's actually... he would definitely give it a buy. Related to early access, give us a little more detail. Why do you guys consider this early access? And can you give us any more details on when it's going from early access to actually live?
We haven't confirmed a launch date, but I can say that we've always sort of said later this year for the full version of the game. That's definitely what we're working with as far as a plan. As to why we did early access, I don't know about other developers, but we were running out of money. We needed money. It was getting pretty stressful. Like I have a wife, I got two kids, and a mortgage, and I've been doing this for 2 years with very very little pay. I guess Kickstarter was good. We got a little bit from that, but most of it went right back into the game.
Tell us a little bit about the Kickstarter. What did you think about the Kickstarter? Did you enjoy it? Was there a lot of hurdles? What's your thoughts on it?
I mean, enjoy is a weird word because it sounds like it was just straight up fun. It was a lot of work. Tyler and I,
because you guys were very successful, 313,000.
Sure, but I think we were successful because we took it really, really seriously, and we just didn't pull any punches. So, Tyler worked full time on the campaign for about probably, I'd say, 8 weeks leading up to it. He was almost full time. I was almost full time on it for, 4 to 6 weeks, somewhere in there, leading up to it. And then the two of us were basically on it, full time while it was running for another month. So it takes a lot of time out of development. There was a lot of debate about how we structure things and how we do this and how much to ask for and what we're going to provide for value. And so it was intense, but the validation and knowing that there's a market for what we're doing, the development dollars that we got, and just the enthusiasm of the backers was really really validating and made it all kind of worthwhile. But I can't call it fun because it was a lot of work.
I love how you matched up your what you want to do with what you're actually doing, and the steps went right along. I mean, not only did you have your plan of what you wanted to do, but the appropriate planning on every step of those things, so you guys did it perfectly.
Yeah.
Well, I look at it like if you're in a zombie apocalypse, let's say, and you get cornered in an alley and you've got, like 8 rounds in your Glock or whatever, you're just going to shoot them all. You're not thinking about, well, what if I should probably hang on to a couple of bullets in case I run into some, crazy cannibals later. You're just going to empty the clip and try to live. And so at every step, we've sort of tried to basically empty the clip. We threw everything we had and did everything we could to make sure Kickstarter was a success.
Yeah, bro,
then we
maybe
did the same thing with Early Access. We were tempted to ship Early Access in October, but we looked at the game and we're like, look, the core is there, but it's not polished enough to sort of make the impact that we really feel like it needed. And so we had to do a big gut check, and for everybody on the team, it was like, wow, shit, that's like, you know, 3-4 more months without any kind of money? Can we actually do this? You know, what if it comes out and it flops? Like, because you don't know, right?
Yeah.
In hindsight, it's like, okay, well, it should have been no problem. But at the time, it's what if there's just no audience? What if we used up most of the market on Kickstarter? What if those people want it and no one else does? You're just fraught with uncertainty. But the bottom line is we just had to sort of empty the clip and take the chance and throw everything we possibly could at early access launch. And we're
You there?
Sorry, we might have lost you.
Pick up. Chad.
Hello?
Here we go. Chris, you there?
Hey, that was really weird.
Oh, hold on. We're not quite done with the emergency. You there?
Hello?
Yep.
Okay, hey, there we go.
Sorry about that.
Okay. I know we took up a lot of your time, so we're going to try to wrap it up here.
Well, let's talk.
Okay. Sorry about that. I don't know what happened there.
No.
No, it wasn't your end.
Let's talk about the next patch, because I imagine that's what you want to talk about this interview.
Oh, I don't know. We'll talk about whatever you want, to be honest.
Well, I'm interested in the next patch because I want to know what these next classes are coming out.
Well, I don't know about your post-apocalyptic zombie strategy. I would shoot Chad and Bobby and take their shit and run. I don't know. That's not bad.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
That's only two bullets, right?
Especially Bobby.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk
Why are you losing at the game if you're thinking this like ruthlessly?
Damn, you should be beating it in no time.
Well, let's talk about this patch that's coming out. Is it still on schedule for May?
Yeah, that's the plan, end of May.
Okay, so two classes coming out, Man-at-Arms and Arbalest. Obviously, you've mentioned a little bit on your website. Can you give us a little more detail on these two classes and how they incorporate into the game?
If you got anything else that you haven't announced, we would love that little juicy bit.
Yeah.
Well, we try to be pretty transparent, so unfortunately, I don't have, like, you know, some giant secret. Also, five more heroes. Oh,
yeah. Now
we chose these heroes, the Man-at-Arms, the Arbalest, because they have a couple of interesting mechanics that we wanted to introduce into, you know, the game proper.
Okay.
So that'll be pretty cool. We're experimenting with a guard kind of mechanic. And
Is that like a taunt sort of thing where it's like you can protect your other?
Yeah, it's definitely protection oriented.
Okay.
You know, I kind of think of the Man-at-Arms as like the support stuff of a jester with the tankiness of a leper or a crusader.
Okay.
So I think he's going to fill an interesting role because he might allow you to double or triple up on DPS because he can do a couple of sort of
that's cool
roles in one. So that could be pretty interesting. And then the Arbalest is sort of like like the opposite of a glass cannon, but still a cannon, like a fucking plate mail cannon.
This is Emilio's favorite class, which he never gets to succeed. So go ahead, tell us about this Arbalest.
Yeah, this is she's like think of Vasquez from Aliens, right?
Okay.
Oh, nice.
So she's this plate mail professional soldier. Prefers the back. She's got some heals because we recognize that there aren't enough options for heals. But also, think of her like a turret, so like an emplacement, so you can kind of rally around her, and she keeps your health up, and then she can just drop these huge hits.
Is she hot? Because I'm already in love.
Yeah.
Like, you just named all the stuff that I love.
Well, it's funny, the hot thing is like, I don't think anybody in the game is hot.
Yeah, no.
You
it's
know,
like grimy. It's like dirty, right?
Maybe for you guys.
A male can find hot in a closed door with no lights on, so he can find it.
Yeah, even the dudes are pretty run down.
Yeah. Well, should we?
Men are arms, maybe?
A couple of bosses, yeah.
Yeah, tell us about these bosses. Are they mini bosses or are they new bosses that expand on the levels? How are these bosses fit into the structure of the game?
Well, the plan was always to have... Well, it was a Kickstarter goal, actually, a stretch goal that unlocked. So we have double bosses for every zone. So our plan, we've said 2 to 3 just because we need some wiggle room.
Okay.
And people get upset when you sort of say one thing and then don't quite do it.
Obviously.
So our hope is that we can do one new boss in each of the existing dungeons. And then, you know, that'll obviously expand the things that you need to do as far as the caretaker goals. They might not always pop, you know, now that we have two in each region. So we have this sort of this weird prophet kind of guy for the ruins. Have this nonsensical, massive, disgusting flesh in the Warrens, true to the theme of the Warrens.
Yeah.
And And that's awesome. Yeah, then we're playing with sort of like a brigand focused barricade type thing for the Weald or the Forest level. So you know, and each one has a different kind of mechanic, and it allows us to sort of expand the repertoire of what, you know, not just the, we introduce the mechanic with these bosses, but it allows us to sort of retroactively attach that to other characters or other monsters going forward. So
these would be maybe like a high level boss, like you do the pig boss first, and then you go back around and hit the prophet boss or the mass, or could it be like back and forth? It just depends on what the game gives you.
It could be, and to be honest with you, we haven't actually like nailed it down.
Okay.
So step one is the content, and then step two is sort of how we roll it out. I think one way we could do it is by balancing the top level of the new boss to be like a level 6.
Ooh.
So that you start with, let's say,
so I'll never see
the Swine
them.
Prince. Then you do the first level of the disgusting pile of flesh. Then you do the next level of the Swine Prince, and back and forth. But you know, the last guy is actually just a little bit extra tough. That's one way we could do it. We're not sure. We're just going to kind of get it in there and sort of see. And part of that is, you know, we might even change it after we release it during early access. We see how people respond to, you know, how it's like dribbled out or whatever.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Cool, Chris. Dude, I want to thank you so much for your time. We have one special question we ask to everybody that we interview. What is your favorite game of all time and why?
We already know up on your website you listed Thief 2, so if you want to give that as the answer, that's fine. But if you do, tell us why you like it and give us some detail.
Okay. It's Thief 2 with like a side of Eye of the Beholder 2.
Okay. And why? Give us some detail.
Thief 2 was a fantastic example of horror and steampunk and medieval stuff done right, which is a very, very tricky creative balance. It's a lot of lead guitars competing for attention, and I felt like it came off as its own, it had its own identity, and it was very, very unique in that regard, and it delivered a lot of story with very, very little actual sort of cinematics or you know, grandiose stuff. It was a very intimate, very tightly woven story that they told through bits and pieces, and it was kind of up to you to put it together, and the more you explored, the more you understood. And I really that minimalism, I think, is really, really tough to get right, and I thought they did a great job. And Eye of the Beholder 2 was just like, I just went through reams of graph paper as a kid trying to figure out those dungeons. And that gave me the sense that we wanted to create in this game, where, like, you know, you're poisoned and you can't find a place to rest because the monsters keep attacking you, and, you know, just being hopeless and lost. And it did a great job of that. And I never beat it.
Really?
I played it for so many hours, and it's one of my favorite games ever, and I've never beat it.
I feel like that's where I'm going to be with Darkest Dungeon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know what, though? That's great.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, can I have one good thing without two bad things, please? Yeah. Just please.
No, but
I have one good thing without
they redid
two bad
the
things.
Trinkets and
trinkets got all buffed up.
Yeah,
and, you know, that's we're working on that stuff.
Well, one last question, Chris. Achievements. Mm-hmm. You currently don't have them on the Steam Steam. However, you did announce that you guys are going out for PS4 and PS Vita. I'm assuming that trophies will be going out then. Are we safe to assume that achievements will be going out then at the same time for the Steam, or is that coming up later?
I'm not sure of the exact timeline, but when we ship the 1.0 on Steam, it'll have Steam achievements.
Awesome.
And I hate to be that guy, but I'm going to go ahead and suggest a new boss, a drunken podcaster. He could either build up or let down your team at any one point.
Usually let down.
He's got the shifty eyes.
Right. And the inane rambling skill.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, and he cuts off his teammates. If they're attacking, he can cut their teammates off and just jump in.
Well, cool, so. but a self-heal, make fun of Bob.
Yeah, exactly. Make fun of Bob. I like it. Well, thank you very much, Chris. We really appreciate your time. We love your game. We're waiting to see what's coming up next. And the next game that's coming out for Red Hook, well, I'm sure we're going to love that as well. So.
I don't even care about the next game. Honestly, I'm so happy with this. Yeah. And I know that quality content's coming down the road.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, we really appreciate your time.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you for having me, guys. And yeah, we're working hard, and we're going to make the game even better. So cheers.
Awesome.
Cheers, buddy.
Cheers.
Bye.
Take care.